Chief Justice Breckinridge, judges, may it please the court. In our capacity as lawyers, we wear many hats. One of the most important hats we wear is that as fiduciary for our clients. When we look at trust account violation cases, as in the case today, we look at what lawyers should know and the bright line rules that this court has established for trust account issues. Lawyers' duties to know those rules, apply those correctly. This is a case involving an attorney, Mr. Burke, who has over 30 years of experience in the practice of law and also has a PhD in economics. This matter first came before the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel in November of 2013 with an automatic trust notification overdraft to the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel. At that point, the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel opened an investigation into Mr. Burke's trust account, which revealed several other violations of the rules of professional conduct, both the rule that was in place in 2010 and the more recent rules that came into place 2013. What we found and what the evidence has shown at the hearing that this matter proceeded to were several rule violations that were either admitted to by the respondent or proven beyond the preponderance of the evidence at the hearing. First of which is that Mr. Burke deposited personal funds into his attorney trust account and then paid personal expenses from those personal funds. That was admitted in a letter to the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel, was admitted in his answer to the information that was filed. Respondent Mr. Burke has also admitted to a separate violation of Rule 4-1.15 in that he did not maintain proper records of his trust account in this case. It was admitted in the information, evidence at trial, or evidence at the hearing also proved that he did not have a good explanation for where the basis of the funds were in the account.
What's the basis for, there's three different recommendations, one's a reprimand, one's an admonition, and one's a suspension, stay, and probation. Why is your recommendation different from the other two? And what basis is that regarding the EB standards?
Judge, our recommendation for stay suspension with probation in this case, we've made that recommendation and we're the ones that appealed from the hearing panel because we believe that consistent with all the information we have and other trust account violations, cases that this court has looked at, that the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel has looked at, that that's the most consistent level of discipline and that's the appropriate level of discipline in this case. Where we disagree with the panel's decision to...
Collected somewhere so people can look at that and as precedent for future reference and representing clients?
Not necessarily, Judge Teitelman. What we do have is, what we look at for guidance is we keep track just internally at the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel on...
And what about counsel for the defendants? Do they have any access to that too to see what's a proper recommendation or not a recommendation?
I think the best... that they can look at, Judge. The best case that we have out there is this court's opinion in N. Ray Coleman, which I believe is from 2008 opinion, which I've cited in my brief and I'm prepared to discuss here today.
Coleman, go ahead and answer his question, then I'll ask you about Coleman.
I do think Coleman provides guidance, and it's very factually similar to the case at issue here, where an attorney was depositing funds, personal funds, into his trust account. The Coleman court said that using that, then using those funds for personal use is strictly prohibited. You've got issues where poor record keeping in that case.
But isn't this case different in that case, I believe, there was a commingling, and you allege commingling here, mm-hmm. and I don't see the evidence of commingling. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me, because if I understand the facts correctly, you're saying there was $124 of client funds still in the account when he deposited and took out personal funds, but if he had already refunded the full $1,500 paid by his client, he'd already refunded it to his client. That I don't know who that $124 belonged to, but it wasn't a client because there was no client to pay it to. There was no, I mean, who are you saying owned those funds when the client who, what he did was improperly reimburse a client out of his office account. It's not that he had client funds in his and personal funds in his trust account anymore. He seemed to have flipped the two.
Right.
And that's certainly a violation, but it's not commingling, and that's what I took it as you saw made it more serious and why you recommended a state suspension.
Sure. Just when we look at the issue, so the OCDC's investigation in this matter went back to January 31st of 2013. And our starting balance at that point was the $124.66 at that point. Mr. Burt's testimony at the hearing was that he only had deposited client funds into the account twice. One of this was this $1,500, which you're talking about, Judge, mm-hmm. in 2012. Of that amount, he took $1,000 for his fee, and then he was going to use $500 by his own testimony, $500 for expenses, filing fees. I think he hired a private investigation firm. What is a concern to us in the commingling aspect was that was only, we looked at his ledger at the hearing, and this is in the transcript. The ledger itself is not in evidence, but those checks were only $307.25 or something like that. So there should have been a balance of $192.50. So one question I have about commingling is, where is this other $70?
So you said, but this is over $70, but what client are you saying is owed this money? You're saying this was client money?
Right. And that is true, Judge. So the client that is in this case, the testimony was that he does refund the client the full amount of the $1,500.
So whatever it is, it's, I mean, he, bad record keeping, and that's a separate allegation.
Sure.
You have, absolutely, that shows bad record keeping. But I don't see that it shows he's got client money in there, and if there's no client money in there, mm-hmm. he doesn't know what a trust account's supposed to be for, but he's not commingling.
Right.
Well, does the definition of commingling mean putting personal funds, I mean, it's not limited, is it, to yeah. the fact that there are client funds in the account? It is, you are utilizing a trust account for personal use, not just for client use.
I think that's correct, Judge. And
is there anything that does define it that way? Because I've never seen one where all he did was use it for personal use. How is that commingling?
Well, I think, Judge, specifically,
is there any case that defines that as commingling, so you know he was commingling, I'd yeah. say?
I think this is a perfect example of the rule having a broad definition or a broad interpretation from this court for commingling, because it's very difficult to determine exactly, based off his record keeping, his testimony, and what we've been able to put together, you know, what exactly are client funds and what exactly are personal funds. And I think that's the problem when you have
But that is your burden, to mm-hmm. show that he commingled. That,
correct.
I mean, if you are unable, because of a bad record keeping, to show he mixed personal and client funds, and he said there were only two clients and they got their money back, haven't you, not that
right.
you haven't done a fine job, but there simply is not the evidence, as opposed to your other two charges, which is that he deposited personal funds in his trust account and vice versa, which you separately charged from commingling, and he didn't maintain proper records, both of which you have lots of evidence in the record of.
Right. I think the distinction, Judge, if you could make it, is I do think, you know, he did do his best to return the funds to the client in this case, but we put on evidence at the hearing, and it's in the record, I know I've cited in my brief. I think the proper thing would have to do to prevent any appearance of impropriety, any appearance of commingling in this case, or any actual commingling, which we still think the funds were commingled, would have been, so there's still this $124, which on his testimony is client funds. He refunds it out of his operating account. I think the appropriate procedure would have been to refund what was left.
100% I agree with you, but I think the question was, why did the DHP recommend a reprimand, and you're recommending a state suspension?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be on your different characterization
sure.
of what that meant. And if the I'm not aware of any case where we've had commingling means putting personal funds in the trust account where there's no client. I mean, there's nothing to co with. if there's no client funds, this is sort of unique in that situation. But it concerns me here that we're calling that a suspendable commingling offense on that basis, as opposed to whether or not are we going to say putting personal funds in your client account, whether or not there's client money there, is a suspendable offense. We could certainly do that, but I'm not aware we ever have.
But in some respect, we play multiple roles. One is being a penalizing Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel, penalizing bad conduct. But the other aspect, and that's why we get the bank records, is because we're trying to protect the public.
Mm-hmm.
If we go with an admonition or a reprimand, it doesn't necessarily the bookkeeping is still bad, and it may be a different role that the OCDC has, that you've been alerted to a train wreck that might happen, and so by putting on probation, you're basically, I assume, monitoring his finances, making sure he reconciles his accounts and gets it in order so the train wreck doesn't happen. that's a different role of protecting the public versus the company aspect.
And I would agree with you, Judge, and I think I answered both questions. Judge, to answer your question about why we want suspension or recommending state suspension with probation in this case as opposed to the panel, as I read the panel's opinion, they don't make any specific findings about commingling. They do say that a lot of his testimony about what happened to the money or his explanations was not necessarily believable. As I understand and I read the panel's decision, Mr. Bird also testified that he was retiring from the practice mm-hmm. of law and shutting down his practice.
And that was why he didn't have other clients.
And that's
no
why
client
he didn't
money.
Have other clients. Now, I know because I've seen Mr. Bird's appearance in Missouri CaseNet dockets after this fact that I have reason to believe that his testimony on that point is incorrect. So my concern is, as Judge Teitelman addressed in this case, is not so much necessarily a discipline, you know, punishing this attorney for having bad record keeping or that type of thing, but obviously that's one of the things we look at, but this is more of a safety of the public type concern.
Of course, our rules now permit a reprimand with probation. They didn't at one point, but the last few years ago we revised it. So you can, if you think someone needs supervision, you can get that with a reprimand.
So we could reprimand him and put him on 2 years probation and monitoring his, reconciling his accounts and getting his affairs in order. Someone could say they're retiring tomorrow, and as long as they still have their license, they can go back and practice.
Right.
That's just that you can't really rely on that.
And that's correct, Judge Teitelman, and that's one of the positions that I brought up to the panel in my closing argument, and also that was discussed on the record at the hearing, was there's no retirement rule in Missouri. So we have an attorney saying he's retiring from the practice of law, and the panel believes that, and there's really nothing to take. He did testify that...
Well, they can go inactive. Like, I've had a number of people become senile, and they don't want to be disbarred, and they go inactive.
But he did not do that.
No,
correct.
He didn't do that.
He actually testified that he was going to keep his license current and continue to do his CLE. So, and, mm-hmm. you know, based on the practice Mr. Burt did, and, you know, primarily personal injury and everything, and that being a primary emphasis in my private practice, you know, even if I'm not necessarily practicing, the good case
would,
comes
would
in.
Reprimanding him and putting him on probation for 2 years to get his affairs in order and monitor what he does, would that be acceptable to the OCDC?
I think what would be acceptable to the OCDC, Judge Shettleman, would be some form of probation and some form of monitoring. What
suspension implies some misconduct, which it may be, but it might have been just
right.
sloppy practice. So or even admonition and probation would be fine with you guys.
Right. I think as long as there's monitoring of Mr. Burt's practice, that's the primary concern here. Is when we look at our concerns as the Office of Justice and our Council of Protection of the Public, that's one of the paramount concerns.
What's the result if somebody violates their probation and they just have a reprimand?
They just have a reprimand? That's a good point, Judge Fisher. I would...
Don't our rules provide that violating probation is itself a violation of the rules, which can be subject to sanction?
I would think that's correct, and then that there would be a new either information or a new disciplinary
proceeding. So what's the benefit of it then? If the idea is it's just another discipline, what's the...
In this case, Judge Fisher, I'm inclined to agree with you because I see, and again, the suspension we're looking at and looking at guidance from this court and looking at the Coleman case, I think a suspension is better than a reprimand in this case because you've got potential for an attorney coming back to practice law. This attorney actually also said that he was fine with suspension, that he just thought it would be embarrassing.
Has he been disciplined before?
He has not been disciplined.
So what's the idea of progressive discipline?
Well, again, we're looking at... In trying to look at consistency here, when you talk about progressive discipline, you're talking about an attorney who, you know, may or may not return to the practice. And I think, you know, reprimand.
Well, no, progressive discipline is you start out with a reprimand, and
sure.
then of course it depends on what the offense is and what they've done. But you normally don't start out with disbarment. You start
right.
out with something lesser, and if that's not effective, you may move on to. To a higher discipline, but it would, of course, depend on the seriousness of the offense, which is why
right.
I focused on the commingling. Again, I want to come back to it. Is there anything in the rules or cases that suggests there's commingling where you haven't mixed client and personal funds?
There's nothing that I've read, Judge, but if you may speak to the commingling issue here,
please.
Briefly. You know, again, in this case, you've got this attorney amount at the beginning, this $124, which all evidence points to that being attorney fees, and I know he pays it back, but he doesn't pay it back until April of 2013. There's another amount that comes into his trust account from a client settlement in February of 2013, and then he immediately pays that back out of there, but he leaves a balance at that point, and I think the best evidence for the court to look at is the spreadsheet that we put together, which is at the record at page 140 and 141. This amount comes in.
Do you take into account the future impact of a finding by this court that there should be a probation suspension on his future income? If he's not going to be a lawyer, but he's going to be an expert. So what does that mean to him if he is punished at the level that you're requesting that he be punished? His ability to earn income, the examination he'll receive when he endeavors to be involved in a case where he might testify. Do you take that into account? I mean, in this circumstance, where the suggestion is, though you've indicated otherwise, which I didn't see in the record, that he may be working in the future, but he is going to be an expert witness. So do you take that into account?
Into account that, Judge Ochsenhandler, that a suspension may affect his ability to participate as an expert witness?
Yes.
He's besmirched. That's not something that's that necessarily, you know, in looking at Mr. Burt's thing, I think that is something that a reprimand or a suspension, those are both going to be published out there and for the public to see. So I think even if you're looking at
the public doesn't necessarily pick up the Missouri Bar Journal.
That's
but
correct.
But the other aspect is, as following up Judge Ochsenhammer's question, is the legal malpractice. I mean, the carriers are going to probably steer away from. And conceivably, if he's in the personal injury business, he may be, get people come and see him. He refers it to another lawyer. He acts according to the rules, and that may be why else to be in practice. But legal malpractice carrier is going to look at reprimand and suspension and look askance on that on covering him. Well, it does have collateral effects.
I agree, Judge Tumlin. I do agree, Judge Ochsenhandler. I think when you're looking at, though, either reprimand or suspension, you're right that a layperson is not necessarily going to read the bar journal, but an attorney doing their due diligence in a case, if he's an expert witness in a case, for instance, should do that, and a reprimand or a suspension is both going to come up as possible grounds for impeachment.
Although if you look at the Mitchell case, it's not clear that would be relevant. It might be collateral.
So it might be collateral. But
these are also, if I miscount my bank account, these are trust accounts. That's the other issue. Mm-hmm. Whatever, how you manage your trust account, whether you ever draw your trust account, that the trust account is there to entrust for your clients.
Right.
And so it's not like my personal account. I try to add it up right, but you never know. But it's your trust account. That's why you're monitoring. That's why you get the material. That's why you get the information.
I want to revisit what I mentioned earlier, and that was what is meant by commingling. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for the rule to see if there was a statement in the rule that would define it in response mm-hmm. to Judge yes. Stitt's question. And in your own brief, you say that the lawyer mixes his own funds with the client. That's commingling. Mm-hmm. So tell us, I know that you said he left some client's funds in the account, which he then subsequently paid out of a different account, refunding them more than
right.
they were entitled to. He deposited another fee into his account. When did he start using the account as his own account? When did he deposit his own funds into that account? Was it before or after he refunded the $1,500?
Looking at our exhibit number 3 from the hearing, which again is at page 140 and 141 of the record, so it looks like the first time, well, when he gets this settlement in of approximately $158,000.34 in February, he disperses out of that. He leaves approximately $1,669.22 in there when he should have dispersed out all of it. He left his own some own funds belonging to him in there that at that point, it's our position, were commingled with the 100.
Part of his fees he didn't take out.
Correct.
And again, he is entitled to whether it's 124.62 or 192.50 mm-hmm. after he paid the $1,500, which was which date? When did he pay the $1,500?
When did he pay the $1,500 back? I believe the evidence of that was in April 25th, I believe, of 2013.
Okay, so there are funds in the account that he's entitled to that he's left in the account, which you think is a violation of not keeping his funds separate. But other than those funds, was there a time when he deposited his personal funds into that account when there was client's money in the account?
Again, Judge, I think it depends on your distinction of, you know, the, our position is the 124.62 was client funds, regardless of whether he dispensed it out of operating.
So what client was he going to pay it to?
So
what client are you saying was owed that money?
Well,
he says client funds, which client?
Well, again, Judge, I think the proper position would have been to refund it out of there. What's that?
No, no, that, but that's a different matter. You're saying it's client funds, and the client, obviously he should have paid out
right.
of his trust account, but if he fully paid him, there's no client owed that money. How can
right.
it be client funds?
My concern, Judge, would be when we look at a trust account case, and I understand the position, and I knew that this was going to be a point of emphasis today, because it's not a clear commingling case. And the court has picked up on that very quickly, and I've done my best to address it in the brief and everything. My concern, Judge, is building too many exceptions or too many, you know, this is into a trust account rule. We've got some pretty clear guidance, and as Judge Teitelman noted, as the Coleman case notes, you know, use of a trust account for personal use is strictly prohibited.
Well, even counsel, wait, before you go completely under for the third time, the date in April, he refunded the $1,500 from a different account, but he refunded it.
Correct.
The day before he did that, in his trust account, there was money that belonged to him and money that belonged to a client.
And that's what I'm asking.
That's
what
correct.
Client?
That's commingling.
And that's commingling. That's
what money did he have money in the account on that day before? What money was
he
with
got
personal
this,
funds as opposed to the fees he hadn't taken out?
He got this settlement in February of $158,034.55. He paid $100,000 out to a client. He paid about $1,500 out to Midwest Litigation for depositions. Then he transferred $55,000 to his operating account, leaving a balance of $1,669.22.
And what he should have done is sent that money to the client because he had the money in there, and instead he did it out of his office account. And does that make it commingling?
So our position would be that I think what he should have done, Judge, was he should have taken the full amount back to that 124 because that was client funds at that time. But he left about you know, another $1,400 in there.
But you always have to have a month. I mean, when I started to practice the law in 1974, there was no IOLTA rule, but no bank. I needed to have an account for my trust account and my business account,
sure.
but no bank was going to let me open up an account for the trust account unless I put money in it. And I had no clients. Mm-hmm. So I had to put $100 of my own money, maybe it's $1,000 now, to start an account. No bank's going to let you open an account unless you have money to put in it. And if you have no clients, how are you going to, I think we have a rule on this somewhere. I remember it was on the OCDC advisory committee, but there's a rule there somewhere where you're allowed to start your account when you don't have any clients. You have to have a trust account.
You do have to have a trust account.
And to start it, you have to have money. And where are you getting the money from if you have no clients?
Right. You do
your
have
own
to have
money.
Trust account, Judge Teitelman. What I'll say is that the rules, right. The rules at this point, as I interpreted the rules, say that on the face of the rules, Rule 4-1.15, I think the subpart is F, is that the only personal funds allowed in a trust account or for the payment of bank fees, bank charges, and that type of those charges. And my understanding, just from discussions with the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel and the people that deal with the trust account issues, is that the bar has negotiated a lot of very favorable rates with banks so that there are almost no charges. So
it's not the bar, it's the IOLTA Trust Account
that's correct.
Foundation. It's a separate entity from the bar. And that's when the Trust Account Foundation started in the 80s. But before mm-hmm. that, and then they pick up all the expenses because it's the advantage of the Trust Account Foundation. But to start a bank account, you have to have money.
Mr. Rep, I just want to say that probably, I don't know there's anybody in their first argument that's gotten quite so many questions, and I just want to compliment you on your demeanor and calm and knowledge of the record in responding to our questions.
Thank you.
We concur. Thank you for your argument.
Thank you,
Judge. The case will be submitted.